May it be allowed to send to you this little writing of mine in order that the entry of the Tatars and the very great destruction and harm of the Christian people may stand clearly before your lordship. May you read it carefully, for indeed you will find in it much that happened before my own eyes, and many other things that I experienced myself. But should you at times find in it such matters that may appear horrendous and terrible to the human mind, you should not be astonished at me, the writer, or the events, but give thanks to the King of Kings, who, forgetful of his mercy, did not spare his oppressed people, but whetted his sword as the lightning against them. I'm not telling this without purpose, because he who should fall into the hands of the Tatars, it were better for him not to have been born. And I say this as one who has known it. I was among them for a time and a half, and death would have been a solace, for life was but a torture. In the year of the Lord's incarnation, 1242, it happened that Khutun, king of the Cumans, sent solemn envoys to the king with the message that he had fought the Tatars for many years and twice defeated them. But the third time, as he was unprepared, they suddenly broke into his land, and so, being unable to have an army, he was forced to turn his back to the cursed Tatars. They devastated most of his land by force and killed his people. After the passing of 1 year of the Lord, news came that the Tatars were devastating the confines of Hungary, adjacent to Rus. When this was announced all across Hungary, the Hungarians, amidst their exceeding hilarities, did not believe it, and maintained that they had often heard such things about the Tatars and always found out they meant nothing. They said that many things are reborn that have fallen before. About the middle of Lent, one of the Palatine's men arrived post-haste to the king and reported in the name of the Count Palatine that the Tatars had reached the Russian gate and were destroying the border obstacles. The king was still incredulous. But on the fourth day, the Palatine himself arrived, having ridden night and day, and reported that in early March, on the 12th, he had engaged them at the gate. Almost all his men had been cruelly killed by arrows and swords. He had escaped with a few and come to report what had happened. The king, although quite astounded by the bad news, released his archbishops, bishops and others, his ispans and barons, firmly and strictly ordering them to gather their troops and return to him as soon as possible, not losing time as urgent necessity and evident need demanded. The city of Oradea was very famous in Hungary. Therefore, many nobles, ladies and peasant women had gathered there. Even though the bishop had left with some of the canons, I stayed there with the remaining people. We had the castle repaired with a strong wall, so that we could find refuge there should we be unable to defend the city. But when one day the Tatars suddenly arrived and my situation in the city was precarious, I did not want to go to the castle, but ran away into the forest and hid there as long as I could. They, however, suddenly took the city and burnt down most of it and left nothing outside the walls of the castle. Having collected the booty, they killed men and women, commoners and nobles alike, on the streets, houses and fields. They pardoned neither sex nor age. That done, they suddenly retreated, gathered up everything in the retreat and settled 5 miles from the castle. They didn't return for days, and those in the castle thought they had left because of the strength of the castle. When the Tatars did not come to the castle for several days, and everyone thought that they had completely withdrawn from there, many of the warriors and others who were in the castle, confident that they had withdrawn, left the castle and moved together into the houses that still remained outside of it. Then, one day, at dawn, the Tatars, whose whereabouts they could not know, rushed upon them and killed those who did not manage to flee to the castle. They immediately surrounded the fortification, set up 7 siege engines across from the new wall, and bombarded it ceaselessly with stones day and night until the new wall collapsed totally. They seized the warriors, cannons, and others who had not been killed by the sword in the attack. The ladies, damsels, and noble girls tried to escape into the cathedral, but because they could not easily enter the cathedral, they set fire to it and burnt the church, together with the women and whatever there was in the church. In other churches, they perpetrated such crimes that it is better to keep silent, lest people get ideas for most evil deeds. Then they ruthlessly beheaded the nobles, citizens, soldiers, and canons on a field outside the city. They violated the saints' graves, trampled upon the relics with their sinful feet, smashed to pieces the censers, crosses, golden chalices and vessels, and whatever else was designed for the service of the altar. They dragged men and women alike into the churches and shamefully mistreated and then killed them there. After they had destroyed everything, they left the place empty. People hiding in the nearby forests came back to find some food, and while they were searching among the stones and the bodies, the Tatars suddenly returned, and of those living whom they found there, none was left alive. And this slaughter was repeated day after day. The King of Kings and Lord of the Tatars who entered Hungary was called by the name of Batu. Having entirely and single-mindedly destroyed Rus and Cumania, they decided to occupy Hungary. When the king marched out from the city of Pest, as I mentioned, and moved with a great number of armed men against the Tatars, they stopped burning villages, quickly assembled, and retreated by the way they had come. Meanwhile, the king encouraged his men to prepare manfully for battle, and personally handed out many flags among the great men. The Hungarians, though, trusting their number, made fun of all this and, owing to the matters discussed above, had neither mind nor spirit for fighting. They thought that any such calamity would only hit some in particular and not all in general. But not now. The present was no way like the past. The Tatars found a ford far from the army and crossed overnight. At dawn, they surrounded the entire royal army and started shooting arrows like a hailstorm. The Hungarians, being both disconcerted and outwitted by their ruse, armed and mounted their horses, but the soldiers could not find their commanders, the commanders their men, and, when they set out to battle, they marched faintly and slackly. Arrows were shot into the air so densely that they almost covered the warriors in shadow and flew like locusts and grasshoppers that move in swarms. Unable to resist the shower of arrows, they returned to the camp. There, the king was unable to set up battle lines. No message, not a word, was passed among them. While the king thought they were going into battle, they were escaping rather than going to fight. The slaughter among those both fleeing on the broad road towards Pest and those who stayed with the army was so enormous, so many thousand men perished, that one could not estimate it, nor can one very well trust reports, as the loss was so huge. No mortal man may have certain knowledge of the major and lesser laymen who drowned in the marshes and rivers, were consumed by fire, or perished by the sword. Horses ran around in the fields and groves with saddle and bridle, but without riders, and were so panicked by the noise that they seemed to have gone mad. Their neighing sounded like groaning or crying. The Tatars were at that time concerned only with slaying people and seemed to care little for loot. We, who stayed in the forest among the border obstacles, took flight at night towards Damashta, a large German village on the Krish River. But the Germans did not let us cross the bridge. Instead, many of them insisted that we had to defend their fortified city together with them, which didn't please us at all. So we turned off to an island, which was being well fortified. Since I dared not go on, I stayed with them. When I realized that this place was so well fortified, I liked it and I stayed there. When I had been there for a few days with my servants, our scouts reported that the Tatars were approaching. I hired a guard and a servant, each of us heading three horses, and hastened by night to the city of Chernad on the Muresh River, 8 miles from the island. As we were riding all night as fast as our horses could carry us, at dawn we reached Chernad. But a day before, it too had been taken and destroyed by the Tatars, who had entered Hungary from the other side. The whole region was occupied. We left our horses in some huts and hid for the day in some pits. And at nightfall, we crept back in amidst the Tatars with great difficulty and fear to the old place, and entered the island, eyes downcast and ashamed. While we were in such danger, my servants, who were guarding the horses outside, and some others who were with me, fled from the island with all my money and my clothing. The Tartars caught them in flight and cut them down, while I remained with one servant and almost naked on the island. Not much later, the news came that the Tartars had taken at dawn the said Tamashta, the village of the Germans, and all those whom they did not keep alive were beheaded by the sword with horrendous cruelty. Hearing this, my hair stood on end, my body shivered with fear, my tongue stuttered miserably, for I saw that the inevitable moment of dreadful death was menacing me. I also saw human beings, when earnestly expecting death, unable to grab weapons, raise their arms, move their steps to places of safety, or survey the land with their eyes. I saw people half dead of fear. I called the people of the island together so that we would be better protected. Then I left together with the people and, taking two children, the sons of the headman, my host, and the only servant I still had, I hid among the border obstacles, pretending to go further into the forest. I sent word to the father of the children that I was afraid to return to the island, thinking that if I kept and hid his sons, he would send over necessities to us. But when at the break of dawn the victuals were sent, the Tartars suddenly arrived and surrounded the island. They gave out that they would attack the island from the water, thus the island's people were tricked into defending it from that side. The Tartars, however, stormed the unguarded gates on the other side, seized them, and took the island without any of us having shot an arrow or engaging with them on horseback or on foot. Not only was it horrible to see how many great crimes and what cruel deeds they perpetrated there, but even to hear it would make people recoil in terror. They took all the booty and left only the bodies. When very many people, who had hidden after 3 days, thought the Tartars had withdrawn, they returned to the island to find food, and the Tartars, who were concealed there, caught them, and only very few escaped. When hunger and thirst pained me too much, I too was forced to go to the island at night, overturning remains to look for hidden flour or meat or some other foodstuff. Whatever I could find, I took it deep into the forest. After 10 or 20 days, I again went to the island. Behold, what grief there was, what stench, what fear. I think no one, however much he imagines all types of suffering, would not shudder at this suffering. I had to seek caves, excavate pits, or find hollow trees to have shelter, while the Tartars, like hounds tracking rabbits and boars, rushed through the thick of the thorn bushes, the shadows of the groves, the depths of the waters, and the heart of the wasteland. They searched the forests for a month or more, and since they could not slay everyone there, they invented a new trick as follows. They captured some who were hiding in the forest and sent them out with the message that whoever gave himself up to their trust before a set deadline would be allowed to return home safely. Because the people were already dying for lack of food, they fully believed their word, and so all who were there returned to their homes. And since these forests are vast and innumerable people hid there, the land in an area of 3 days' walk came to be repopulated, and every village chose its king from among the Tartars at its will. After this, all brought in the crops as it was harvest time, including the hay and the straw and everything else to be stored. Many of the Tartars who were there with us looked at all this and enjoyed, and were delighted that fathers redeemed their lives through their daughters, husbands through their wives, brothers through their pretty sisters, kept for their pleasure. They set bailiffs over the people in order to render justice and supply them with useful horses, animals, weapons, presents, and clothing. So we had peace, courts of law, and everyone obtained justice. The most beautiful girls were sent to them, and those who procured them received sheep, oxen, or horses. I often went there to find out if there was any way of getting free. All the bailiffs gave the order that from certain villages, the men, women, and children should appear before them with gifts. We were quite frightened by this news, for we did not know its reason. Therefore, I chose to go to the army rather than stay in the village in such uncertainty. The bailiffs went to receive the gifts, and after they had received them, they led the bearers of the gifts into a valley and killed them there. after terribly despoiling them. Another part of their army turned towards Estergom, but only a few went that far. They mostly settled some distances away and prepared some 30 siege engines. Those of Estergom had, meanwhile, fortified themselves with moats, walls, and wooden towers. The commoners, knights, nobles, and ladies who gathered in that remarkable fortress were so self-confident that they thought they could resist the whole world. But the Hungarians and the French and the Lombards, who were like lords of the city, realized that they could not hold out. So they set fire to the suburbs and the wooden houses, of which there were many, all the way to the stone palace. In the houses, they burned immense amounts of dyed clothes and garments, slaughtered the horses, buried gold and silver, and hid whatsoever goods they had before retiring to the palaces to defend themselves. When the Tartars found out that all by which they wanted to get rich had been burnt, they became very angry and swiftly closed off the city with wooden palisades so that whoever tried to escape would run into the throat of the sword. Having taken them swiftly, I believe, to tell the truth, that no more than 15 people were not killed in or outside the city. They who were due to be captured and killed, the better ladies, dressed as beautifully as they could, gathered in one of the palaces and appealed for an audience with the Grand Prince. All, about 300 of them, were led out of the city to the prince and asked for the gift of being left alive under his rule. He, however, in his anger for not having won any booty, ordered them to be robbed and beheaded. And that was done right away. They held the country both beyond and on this side of the Danube, but the part on this side of the Danube was not as much destroyed, because they did not encamp here but only wasted all they found when marching through. Thus, moving back slowly, we reached Transylvania, where many people who had survived and several castles were. What more, with the exception of a few castles, they occupied the whole country as they passed through. They left the country desolate and empty. As I had no hope of survival, and a bitter and cruel death was already waiting at the door, I thought it were better to die here than be tortured by the steady stings of fear. Therefore I left the highway, as if following the call of nature, and rushed towards the dense forest with my only servant, and hid in the hollow of a creek, covering myself with leaves and branches. My servant hid further away, so that the chance detection of the one should not cause the unhappy capture of the other. We lay thus for 2 full days, as in graves, not raising our head, and heard the terrible voices of those who, following the footprints of erring beasts, passed close by in the forest and often shouted after the prisoners who were in hiding. And when we could no more repress in the deep silence of our hearts the very just demands of hunger, we lifted our heads and began to crawl like snakes, using arms and legs. We mournfully wept and groaned that it would have been easier to die by the sword than that the bond of our limbs and the unity of body and soul fall apart through starvation. While we were exchanging such words of consolation, a man appeared, and as soon as we set our eyes on him, we took to fearful flight and did not turn our sight away to see whether he was gaining or falling behind us in flight. We began to walk across the waste and abandoned land that they had destroyed while retreating. Church towers were our way signs from one place to another, and the road they marked for us was rough. The roads and paths had vanished. Grass and thorn bushes had taken over. Leeks, purslane, onions and garlic left in the gardens of the peasants were, when they could be found, brought to me as the choicest delicacies. The others made do with mallow, houseleek, and cowbane roots. We filled our hungry stomachs with these, and the spirit of life was revived in our drained bodies. Finally, on the 8th day after leaving the forest, we arrived at the city of Alba Iulia. There we found nothing save the bones and skulls of the dead, the destroyed and broken walls of basilicas and palaces, soiled by the blood of an enormous number of Christians. 10 miles from there, next to the forest, was a village, and here, 4 miles within the forest, a marvelously high mountain. On the peak of it was a rock, a looming crag, where a great number of men and women had taken refuge. They received us with joy among tears and inquired about the perils we had passed through, all of which we could not tell them in a few words. Finally, they gave us black bread, baked of flour and the ground bark of oak trees, and it tasted sweeter than any simnel cake we had ever eaten. Although we often visited the formerly inhabited villages, forced by need of food, it was never safe for us to come down until the king returned to Hungary with many companies of warriors from the maritime region, assisted by the Knights of Rhodes and the Lords Frankopan, having been previously informed by Hungarians of the retreat of the Tatars. And so I have written all this to you, Father, without adding in anything false, so that you, Father, who knows about the felicitous turn of my fortune, may know as well about the true nature of my misfortune and danger. Good health, my father.